So let me set up our time. This is Josh Patterson here and Trevor Joy on several podcasts over the last year. I've mentioned the idea of a King's Table and how necessary a King's Table is for really thriving, yeah, for men to thrive. And so talked about that on Kyle Thompson's podcast Undaunted, talked about that on Win Today, talked about that. And then every time I talked about it, we got this windfall of emails from men going, how do you do that? Like, how do you build that? How do you start to build that? I'm alone, or I've got friends, but there's no real depth there. And so I thought, like, for this season, one of the things I wanted to do is just get two of my closest friends who are at that King's Table for me, or what Kyle Thompson calls a 3 a.m. friend. Like, there's friends that'll come to your house at 6. There's some that'll come at 9:30 at night. But every man needs a couple of 3 a.m. friends. Yeah. Just guys, if you call, they're on their way. And I thought, man, let's have a conversation about how the Lord has done this. And so known Josh well over 20 years, known Trevor 15, 16-ish,
yep,
probably really in the kind of way we want to talk about today. It's probably been the last decade, maybe a little bit more than that, where that's really started to coalesce into something more than just we work together, we see each other a lot, we like each other, we like some of the same things, we kind of are in the same spaces, into a more intentional, these are my guys. And so I just wanted to talk about kind of how that happened and what maybe you guys see as the significant moments in this, you know, two decade kind of friendship that we've had with one another. I want to frame it around this 90-year-old study. So the Harvard Study for Adult Development started in 1934 and is still going. And they'll go until that group that they started with in 1934 are all gone. And what they found, it actually surprised them, is that male-to-male relationships are more important for a man in regards to feeling as though he has a fulfilling, meaningful life than IQ, than money, or even his social class. And so this idea of connecting deeply with other men actually has more weight than really any other way we can be spending our time, mm-hmm, whether that be working an extra shift or putting in longer hours or making more money or, you know, trying to become a smarter, better version of ourselves, which those, I'm not saying those are unimportant. I'm just saying they don't bear the same weight as intentionally sewing into relationships with other men. So that's kind of the conversation. I think a good place to start would be maybe talking about all of us are actively involved with men in different ministries and different spaces. And I found it interesting that the predominant narrative around men are they're wild, or they need a woman to tame them, or they're basically little boys in desperate need of some feminine force to kind of constrain those impulses. But that's not what I see in the Bible. That's not how we began. Like we see in the first two chapters of Genesis that God made man, and that it was not good for him to be alone, and that he needed connection. And the kind of connection he did need was a kind of connection that entered him into deep relationship with Eve, and then with work, and then with his sons, and with the greater world. And so talk a little bit about y'all's experience walking with other men. And then are you getting this question as other men see kind of the depth of your relationship? And talk a little bit about that. You can go whoever wants to start us, and then we'll get into our own stories.
Yeah. I think, you know, you'll mention this often when you preach about just the importance of the friendships. Like you'll talk about that as an aspect. You'll say crew. There's other things we've called it over the years. And almost every time you mention that, I will sure enough have a conversation with a man asking about that.
Yeah.
It's like usually, you know, hey, tell me how long that's been. And there's all, they're always looking for, what is the formula that's going to get me, you know, maybe I have guys that I'm trying to build that with, or sometimes they don't. They don't have anything. Like, where do I begin? But usually they're just trying to find what's the formula that gets there. And I think that's been a really interesting thing. And it sounds like that's been kind of some of the responses you're getting from men. They're going, man, maybe I have guys and I don't know how to get from whatever we have to what you're talking about, that deep, that depth, authenticity, the realness.
By and large, my experience, whether it be at the jiu-jitsu gym or before that, the CrossFit gym, guys know other guys.
Yeah.
But not in any way that's deep and meaningful. Yeah. They just kind of know him. This is a guy that works out. Maybe they'll go out and have a beer or two, but it's rare to ever move past that for men. And so then there's this longing there that they're not quite sure how to unlock. Josh, is that similar for you?
Yeah, it is. The word that comes to mind when I think about this is just the loneliness that most men that I interact with experience, whether they call it that initially.
Yeah.
But what they, when they describe what they're feeling or experiencing as they move through the world, they feel lonely.
Yeah.
And there are pressures that men face as they lean into the good and right responsibility and in the various domains of their life. And so they've got responsibilities at work and they've got responsibilities at home. And those responsibilities can often feel like burdens when those burdens or responsibilities aren't able to be shared in some type of healthy relationship.
Yeah.
And that healthy relationship could be limited with a spouse. It can be limited with their kids. And then it's certainly limited with other men.
Yeah.
And so then it starts to create this isolating feeling. And so then men show up either self-protecting or self-promoting.
Yeah.
And so tend to move forward in life either kind of puffed up like the porcupine.
Yeah.
And they show themselves to be big, or they turtle up, you know, and they go into their shell, but what's true about them doesn't really emerge.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of reasons and factors for that. But if I, just to answer your question, do I see that, sense that?
Yeah.
No question. It's pervasive.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So we've been at this quite a long time. And one of the things I'm saying to these men is I don't think there is a super quick fix. But I think you can start to head down that path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if I think about kind of the stuff that we've been through, I think there are some things that do matter. Like I've got good friends that aren't part of my King's Table or my crew or that kind of shield to shield mentality we have. But the thing that really helps with the three of us, and there could be two other guys at this table today too. I just wanted to, for conversation's sake, let's keep it to three of us. So there easily could be two more chairs here today and then we'd have the whole crew here. But there is this idea of proximity and how proximity matters. Because here we are filming this, but I've already seen both of you today and I spent all day with you yesterday. And so talk about the importance of proximity if men are going to develop these kind of deeper, more fulfilling conversations.
Well, we experience that. We've talked about this. We experience that where we have proximity because of what we do.
Yeah.
So that's real. But there was a different level of proximity we had when our kids are at the same school, going to the same games. And there was a short season. There was a season where we didn't have that. And then a season where we did.
Yeah.
And it was, man, you're showing up to games. I'm showing, like, we're all there together. Our family's there together. We're sharing that. I'm cheering on his kid. Then we're waiting to see our kid play. Same with yours. And then a season where we didn't have that again.
Yeah.
We still had our other kind of proximity, but we didn't have that. And then now are back into another sweet season where it's, we're having that. And it only, you see how much that moves the needle in a relationship when we have
that. So if you're listening to us talk, I think the point I'm trying to draw out here is if you see a guy once a week, that's probably not going to be, that's probably not going to be a relationship that's going to be able to hit this over time unless there's a way to weave greater proximity into the relationship. Because so this little triad, I think it's Jefferson Bethke that wrote about it in his and Tyson's book, Fighting Shadows. But he said, you got to have proximity. You got to have unplanned interaction. You got to stumble onto each other. And then his last one was vulnerability. And we'll get to vulnerability But I think guys who are like, I really want this, and they're in a small group at church, which I think we want to create those spaces for people to be together. Yep. But if the only time that you see those guys is on Tuesday night at 7.
Yeah, there's no other
overlap. No. That could be a great jumping off point. Yeah. But I also think, and this would be a good, I'd be curious to hear how you guys would navigate this. We have felt, and you've already mentioned it, my primary calling is very much to my wife and my kids. Both of you have 4 kids. All of our kids have been very active in sports and, all sorts of other hobbies. And then, how do you go, okay, somebody's listening right now and they're like, I'm in a home group. I go to men's Bible study at my church. I don't know how to find proximity. I don't know how to find more time with the men that I'm wanting to build relationships with, simply because life is what it is in this season.
Yeah. I think it's a good conversation to have. It is what it is. Those are challenges that we all face in certain seasons. It's turned up the volume of responsibilities and people running all over the place and misses. But if the question is, how do we get to this?
Yeah.
Then the solution is you have to figure out a way to be around each other.
Yeah. Yep.
And I don't know how to prescribe that into this particular guy's world. I'm just saying that value has to increase in such a way that you orient life around that value, because on the other side of that value is something good. It's something that we will flourish in and because of. And so I want that.
Yeah.
I need that.
Yeah. I mean, there's been times where it's not your kid playing, not my kid playing, but we're showing up.
That's right.
Totally.
And so you got, I mean, and that's a decision. Everything you want, if you want any sort of depth or meaning, it's going to take sacrifice and intentionality. And I was even thinking of seasons of life. I mean, there's been, we're enjoying that season now where there's a lot of overlap that you don't have to work as hard to get. It's naturally there. There's seasons that don't. And there's been late nights, you know, fires.
Fire pit.
Those totally. Early mornings. Just going,
you have to fight for it. You're not going to. It's an intentional decision to say this matters and I'm going to have to get there. There's got to be proximity and time.
Yeah.
And those two things for a long extended season, you know, if you're, and you have things that'll drive it deeper, quicker.
Yeah.
There, you know, there's seasons of suffering, challenge that naturally, you know, those battles.
Yeah. They galvanize battles, for sure.
Yes. It's going to drive deeper, quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're sowing into all those things, then that's just going to take you farther. But
and that's the inevitable reality that men are going to face. They are going to enter into a season where they're overwhelmed by it.
Yep.
Whether that is a work thing or a home thing or a kid thing or a health thing or it is coming. And so to sow into the value of. And then I'll say this. This was a long conversation I had with Lauren about, I will be the best man I can be when I can be with my guys.
Yep.
And not in a way that's I'm going golfing with Ted while you take care of these 3 small kids, but how do I set you up for what you need so I can go and do this thing that I need. I'm not bagging on golf. Maybe golf is the thing where you and your guys can golf and you can do the kind of stuff that we're talking about here. But I just want to make sure people are hearing, like my wife, she has seen and knows Matt is a better man after time with Josh, Trevor, Nick, Mason, and the guys around a fire and a cigar.
Yeah.
He comes back better, stronger, more willing to enter into those places that she wants me to enter into. That, yeah, it is important that you loop in. And then I love this story. We were honoring Josh for his 20th year at the Village, and he called me. You called me. I was in the truck with my son Reed, who's turned 19 yesterday. Yep. He was 18 at the time, and he was in the back seat. Nora was in the front seat. And you and I just had what I think is a normal conversation. And we hung up the phone and Reed just said, how do I want friends like you have friends. And I just thought, I'm so grateful that he's gotten to watch this, because he's been with me at Lily's basketball
game. Totally.
Yeah.
And he's been with me when we run into Ben at the gym, and he's been with me watching me in these relationships with these men in really good seasons where we're laughing around the fire, and really hard seasons when we're not laughing around the fire. Yeah. I mean, I guess we're always laughing around the fire, but sometimes we're laughing to stop crying for a little bit. So I did want to pull on that thread a little bit of the importance of, I'm not just hanging out with you two.
Yeah.
There, I'm not neglecting the things, my role in the Chandler household to hang out with you guys. But I have made this a value, as you were saying, Josh, of in the day of war, I'm going to need some men that aren't sycophants. They're not Matt Chandler fans. They're just guys who love me, love Christ in me, and want for me what the Bible wants for me.
Totally.
And I think that's huge. Most Christians I know, they have this deep longing to understand the Bible more deeply and in ways that move their souls, like to greater worship and gladness. In fact, I feel like I'm in those conversations all the time when it comes to the Bible, like men and women who love God, they go to church. Most of them even start the day by reading their Bible, and yet they still have this hunger to know God's word more deeply in its context and meaning, and in a way that really is transforming their lives. And that's why I'm excited to tell you about Kava. It comes from the Hebrew word Kava, which means to wait on or to hope in the Lord. Kava is a Christian streaming platform that really was built to help you understand the Bible and live out your faith with confidence. Think of it as digital discipleship in your pocket. It has Bible studies, documentaries, and there are these conversations led by trusted teachers that help scripture finally come alive in your everyday life. And another reason why this is one of those I really love is that Kava is a nonprofit subscriber-funded ministry, which means when you subscribe, you're not just getting the benefit, but you're partnering with them in creating biblical content that helps people all over the world go deeper in their faith. So this is one of those, like Kava gives you the opportunity to grow with thousands of others who are finding greater confidence in God's word. So you can visit kava.tv/theovercomer. That's kava.tv/theovercomers. And use code OVERCOMER50 for 50% off your first 6 months. Again, that's kava.tv/theovercomers, code OVERCOMER50.
I just, a couple of weeks ago, taught our men's Bible study, and I got the passage. It's like Joshua 13 through 17.
Come on, allotments.
The allotments, yeah. And if you're not familiar with the allotments section, it will not preach well. I found a way. And in the study of it, so they had just moved through taking over the land.
Yeah.
So it's battle, it's war, it's band of brothers kind of language. And you feel the energy in that. And then you get to the allotment section and it looks more like administrative, plotting, day in, day out kind of leadership, and they lose their way. Mm. And the phrase that shows up through that section is, and they did not drive them out, talking about the Canaanites. Yeah. It's like they didn't finish it all the way. They didn't hit the nail flush. And one of the things that I talked about with the men was just how we've got energy for the battle. Mm-hmm. It's like the big adventure. Everybody wants to get up for that. We're going to go. We're going to go for the big hunt. We're going to go for the big whatever. Yeah. And then there isn't energy given to the day in, day out reality of just driving a stake in here, moving 10 feet down, driving a stake in there. You know, and they're just plotting out the land.
Yeah.
And they're finishing the task in a way that God says, this matters.
Yeah.
And I just wonder what it looks like for us to have extended energy, not just for the high battles, mm-hmm. And the epic kind of seasons of life, but the day in, day out. And that's what, when we're talking about proximity, it's like, you guys are at my kids' games.
Yeah.
It's just a game on a Thursday night or a Tuesday night, or depending on the kid and the season. But those things are deposits. Those things matter, so that when we get into other arenas, there has been some kindling that has been formed. And I deeply appreciate that, especially as I zoom back and get perspective and think about the years of it.
Yeah.
It just starts to add up, and then it just becomes more textured, more layered, and more beautiful.
Yeah. And we've said, we've called it the good life.
Yeah.
I mean, we've lived the good life. I mean, Lily texted me 2 days ago. That's Josh's oldest daughter's at Baylor now.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it's so cool. She was so excited. She found like a James study online. Was like, oh my gosh, I didn't pick yours. I picked this one, but like, of course.
Totally.
Of course.
And then I'd text Reed on his birthday.
For his birthday.
How proud I am of him.
Yeah.
It is the good life, and it doesn't just happen.
Yeah, that's right.
It won't. It won't just happen.
And that's what I was thinking of when you were talking about the proximity, the intentionality, and all those things can be just events that you do. Because I've talked to guys where they're like, hey, I've got a men's group. We're intentional about meeting at 6 a.m. on Wednesdays for coffee and prayer. They've stacked up the events in a really intentional way, trying to get to that level of proximity. And you can have that and it not create the thing we're talking about. So I'm really eager to get to the conversation on vulnerability.
Because I think, too.
Well, as you think about it, it's going, well, what is different?
Totally.
What's different is that we're not participating in an event, we're sharing story.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what takes the relationship deeper, is that you hold my story.
Yeah.
I mean, we had years of interactions and friendship where it'd be like, yeah, we're friends.
Yeah.
But there's just a marked difference between what that was then and what it is now. And the difference is you hold my story, you know, in a different way. And that's, I think, what prevents most men when you're talking to them. Most of them are trying in some way, shape, or form. And there's guys, and then you'll get the story of guys going, man, I've got all these dudes I hang out with and I see them all the time.
Yeah.
But we don't have what you guys have. So you have both and. You have the people that have all the events, people that have none, they're starting from nowhere, and they're both going, regardless, this isn't what we want. We want that.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think of an analogy to picture it, but it's like, if I have all these things that I'm intentionally trying to do that do matter, I mean, you're just not going to get relationship without clock. You're not going to do it. It's just like you wouldn't with your wife. It's going, man, I'm going to spend 5 minutes a day with her. We're not going to have that's just true about relationship. Time is just it is an independent variable that has to be there. But it doesn't necessarily mean depth. So if you think of all these things we're doing are like bricks, and you're going, man, what is the mortar then that is going to hold this thing together? And it's story. It's that vulnerability. It's that the difference is going to be, and there's things that force you to do that. Like vulnerability can be forced.
Yeah.
You know, there's something that happens. Now I am vulnerable and I am forced to invite you into that.
Yeah.
And that can be tragic when that happens, or it can be really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And most men experience the tragic side of it. It's something blew up, whatever's going on in my life, my world that I've been doing alone and fighting alone. It comes out, explodes out in front of everybody. And now I'm forced to invite people in, or people have to force themselves in or whatever, which is a really tragic way for it to happen. But then there's other ways, and the ways that the time we spend with men just saying, but what does it look like to intentionally invite somebody into your story?
Before
the explosion.
Yeah. I heard somebody was using this illustration the other day. Like, I see Josh's cup of water there, glass of water. It was like the water was filled all the way up. And then he said, now that this is like everything you're holding in, and you might not even know that you're holding it in. And then if somebody bumps that glass, it spills everywhere. And so he's talking about vulnerability in a way that, like, you've got to get some of the water out of that glass, so when it gets bumped, it doesn't spill over. I do experience most men as being trapped inside themselves. Yeah. I was at jiu-jitsu it's been 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks. And if I don't know you and we're rolling, I'll almost always at the end ask how I can pray for you. And there's a guy in there that if you just saw on the street, you would probably be a little nervous about him. And, I mean, just really kind of a roughneck guy. And we finished rolling and I just said, hey man, I've got time this afternoon. I'm going to be praying. Is there anything I can pray for you about? And within 30 seconds in front of everybody, he's got tears streaming down his face, began to just talk to me about, thinks he's going to lose his marriage, loves his kids, doesn't have anybody to talk to about that. And now I've got this grown man in a room full of killers. I mean, former Navy SEALs, D1 athletes, competition guys. And it just overflowed out of him. And I just, one, it was a great opportunity to minister to him and then just kind of circle back around with him. But then I just thought, how many guys are stuck like that, where in that day, they don't even have anyone to just call and go, oh man, because it was this, I'm afraid I'm going to. It was like letting it out that he was actually afraid of something from a guy with his background.
Yeah.
Who he shouldn't be afraid of anything with his background. And yet here he's terrified and he doesn't have a single person to talk to about it. And just by the grace of God, I happened to ask him that day. We just got put by Formiga together that he, they're just so desperate. Let's talk about vulnerability. How do you, because I think you've got to be careful to define it.
Yeah.
Otherwise guys will hear this and they'll think they're being vulnerable, but it's not really vulnerability.
Vulnerability is weakness.
Yeah.
And they want to stay away
from it. Yeah. Well, certainly I want to bash that to pieces. But let's try to define it. When we're saying vulnerable, we experientially know what we're saying. Can we frame it in a way that, like, what is vulnerability?
I'll take a stab at it and we can dialogue around it. But the metaphor that I use with folks around vulnerability is I'll compare it to transparency. And so transparency is where I am in control and I can willingly show you what I want to show you. Vulnerability is where I lose a sense of control or I give up a sense of control and I'm trusting you with whatever I'm handing over. And then the imagery would be like, with transparency, I have a shield and I'm moving the shield to show you a part, or, you know, it's like, this is now, I'm being transparent here. Whereas vulnerability is I'm giving you my sword and I'm trusting that you won't injure me with what just, so it's like when you talked about your story, now you said now Matt owns a sense of your story, which means Matt knows things about you that are deep hopes, deep dreams,
deep fears,
deep wounds, and can now weaponize those things against you. Yep. So in some sense, you would think, well, why in the world would I ever give somebody that kind of power over me where they might then be able to hurt me again? And the answer may be, maybe you don't give that to that person because they're not trustworthy with it. But over time, if you want to grow in depth of relationship, you have to.
Yep.
You can't hold your heart back and progress in relationship.
Yeah.
And so there are things I know about you, things you know about me, things we know about one another's story where we have learned about them because you've shared them or we've experienced them together. Yeah. And it's like the sword is at the middle of the table. Yeah. And if you wanted to pick that up and wound me with that, I know you guys both know exactly what to say to me that would get at me deeply. Natalie knows that.
Yeah.
And so that's imagery wise how I've kind of thought about vulnerability. Off that. What do you think?
Yeah, I was thinking the same way. I'm literally looking over at the window as you said that and I was going, man, it is like transparency is like I've got a window with a blind and it's I can ooch it up and let you see different pieces. Vulnerability is I'm opening the window and you can come in. Yeah. You know, you have a different level of access to me as a person. You don't just get the snapshot of who I am. You're invited into the story.
Yeah.
You're an owner of my story. You have ability to speak into its shape in a different way. Yeah. I don't know who it was. You'll probably know the guy who said this. Most men lead lives of quiet desperation. Quiet desperation. And I think of that is this, it, what is, I think the, what is so tragic is this is at the end of the day, the, for every guy that's asking and everybody that's out there listening to this and is thinking through, how do I get that? This piece right here is the missing piece.
Yeah,
I believe the kind of depth that they're wanting.
No.
But you don't get vulnerability unless you give it.
Yeah.
And the practical side of that, what's really hard is like every relationship, relationships usually, it is very rare when they spontaneously happen. Yeah. You know, there are times where it's like something shows up and you got that serendipitous moment where a relationship fires up. But most of the time, a relationship is initiated and it's stepped into. And then you take that, relationships take initiation, and you've got to get vulnerability, you've got to give vulnerability. And then you take men who most of the time approach vulnerability with that vulnerability has this fence around it that's been built by fear and lies creating isolation.
Yeah.
You know, and so you've kind of come into agreement with vulnerability is, and fill it in with whatever descriptor you want. It's weakness, it's scary, or maybe I've done that before or I've had to do that before. And it's, so vulnerability carries with it shame.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Which is a lie from the enemy against men. Yeah. That vulnerability is going to equal shame for you.
Yeah.
Because somebody probably, for most men, especially when you get to our age, most men, their story has been mishandled by somebody at some point in their life. And so that wall usually is erected purposefully, you know, in reaction and response to something.
Well, survive.
Survive, right.
Is what happened, yeah.
And I think some of the, you know, as I'm thinking, this has been really even helpful, reflective, I think of where our relationships deepened is when we stepped into each other's story and became kind of agents of healing, unlocking those moments where those moments that caused those walls to go up.
Yeah.
I didn't know what those moments were. I mean, you two were in the room where I discovered a couple of them, you know, and there's power in that, right? Yeah. You're going, okay, you're not only now know things about me that you could, and this is all just processing out loud. There's not only things you know about me that you could wound me with, but you actually know things about me that you can actually become an agent of freedom.
Yeah.
Totally.
And those are just the layers of invitation.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think maybe even just popping back up to be real practical, because I do know there are so many men that are just there. We're kind of diving deep and they're going, where do I get started? I think it starts with an openness and invitation into your story.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're doing something with our men this fall where we're doing Fire Nights. And the whole hope of that is the power of story. And we've already had some men that have started experiencing it. They've just been gathering men around a fire and they're just starting that with share your story.
Yeah.
And different men are going to wade into that, but it's going to take one guy that's going to go a couple layers deeper, and sure enough, that spark's going to happen. Yep. And other men are going to share and confess. And so I think if we can see men step in, call it whatever you want, vulnerability, whatever, if we can see men really pushing past that wall of pride and isolation and inviting and fear, and inviting people into your story.
Yeah.
I think that's the...
And expect the vast majority of us at the beginning, you don't know how to do it.
No.
It's like, you don't know how to do it. And it's like, you haven't gone snow skiing in 7 years and you go snow skiing and it's like, man, I'm sore everywhere.
Yeah.
There is a fatigue.
I fell 1,000 times.
Yeah. Yeah. You just, there's a fatigue to it. There's a soreness, there's a pain involved in it. Then maybe that's worth talking about or exploring. The journey is not up and to the right.
No.
Where it's like, man, we just sit around the fire and laugh and go deep and share vulnerable things. It's like there's processing deep hurt. There's processing deep pain. There's working through fears that have hooks in me, you. That I feel so frustrated and small and aggravated that I'm still, these things still show up.
Yeah.
And if I can layer that onto to the King's Table language, it's like you brothers around the table are men who love me, fight for me, bless me in and around those pain points and areas. That's one side of it. The other side of it is you are fighting for me, blessing me, encouraging me, loving me in my place of purpose and worth.
Yeah.
So it's like both sides of it. You're helping unlock things.
Yeah.
You're helping me retell a story that maybe I've told myself over and over again. And then you're also seeing something in me. And you guys, for me, I've said this to you so many times, I'll say it here. Nobody has championed God's purpose in me like you guys have championed that in me. And that's a long-standing voice. Even before we had this language, you believed in me.
Yeah.
that matters.
It's huge.
It just matters. And regardless of how confident I might feel, how competent I might be, or competent I might not be, or lacking confidence. I mean, that thing goes either way. Your voice has been steady in that, inviting me to show up true. I mean, that it's truly life-changing. So whatever the Harvard study is, yeah. It's like, yeah, before I knew that study,
it's the good
I'm
life.
Experiencing that.
Yeah.
But there's all kinds of ingredients that go into it, you know, yeah. That.
It very much is a process. And so if I think about the 2 decades, a little under 2 decades here, but I was able to see in proximity first that you were both men of integrity, that you loved your wives, you loved your kids, you were serious about the kingdom, that you were trustworthy men. And now proximity, you can fool a guy with proximity. I mean, we pastor at a large church. The number of guys I see out there that are taking notes and lifting their hands in worship. And then, you know, 6 months later, we learn they're beating their wives and doing cocaine. I mean, that you can fool a guy in proximity. You can put up a front and walls and pretend. But as best I could see, you were men of integrity. And then there were just these little moments. They weren't always my moment, but there were these little moments where there was a failure, or there was a, I'm not talking about a big moral failure. I'm just saying there was a stumble. There was a fall. There was a mistake. There was all the human things that happened to everybody. And to watch either be the recipient of grace because I was the one, or getting to be a giver of grace, if it was one of you or another guy, that felt like, okay, we're on to something yeah. here in the early years. And so I think about, I have no plan of us kind of getting into our stories here in details.
You can get into Trevor's if you want to start there.
I might do that. No, but I think of, I'm in a hotel room in Seattle, and you and Natalie just got some brutal news for you guys. In fact, it kind of played into one of your great fears that totally. At the time, I had no idea that was one of your great fears. Yep. I didn't know you at that level, but I did know you. We saw each other a lot. We were probably really close friends. I would call us really close friends yep. back then. So man, I sent you a text, and then pretty much the guys in the crew were all texting you, just kind of trying to speak life into you in a really hard
yep.
situation. That for whatever reason, because your response was, oh, I guess somebody's told you guys, because you weren't the one that told
me.
Maybe you would have.
Out of total shame.
Yeah.
That's, gosh, how long ago was that? 15,
yeah.
18 years ago, maybe? Yeah. Maybe 18 years ago, which turned out to be an incredibly beautiful moment and season that shows up, again, going back to story, totally.
Yeah.
Of a turning point in my life.
Yeah.
Where God demonstrates and embodies grace to me through people
yeah.
that turn me. Like yeah. I just get, it hits my heart at a deep level where I look to that moment, that season, and think, I can't believe how loved I am by the Lord.
Yeah.
Like I can't shake grace. And it's amazing that what we're talking about without talking about what we're talking about is things that preceded
yeah.
my salvation.
Yeah, part of your story.
That I just hate
yeah.
that the Lord was like, I bore your shame.
Yeah.
yeah.
I bore your
it's
shame.
It's not who you are anymore, yeah. but it's a and reminder of who you were.
You guys
yeah.
echo that, yeah. embody that, yeah. champion that. I mean, it's like, it changes me, you know, yeah. it stays with me. And, but yeah, I mean, that's a 18 yeah. year old moment.
So just to state it clearly, like where we went from, like where I think maybe not the starting point, but the earlier
totally.
Kind of starting point, certainly something that quickened and made us go, whatever that just was, yeah. we want to weave that into everything
mm-hmm.
was this moment where Josh is like, maybe biggest fear and greatest source of kind of shame popped back up, and it was devastating.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think because our wives are friends, I think we had all
news traveled
fast. Yeah. News traveled fast. And
well, but if you think about it, it's like we're operating again. If you rewind,
we're operating like men.
We're operating like men operate. Yeah. I'm not going to share that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to walk through that.
Yeah.
I'm just going to absorb it and try to push through.
Yeah.
And just try to push through and then reinforces the loneliness of it, yep. Reinforces locked up in that shame cycle of it. And the Lord just wasn't having it.
No.
So.
Well, most of us, when we think of our story, the lie we feed to ourselves is, I'm not going to share my story with him because he either doesn't need that burden or doesn't want it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that, yeah, the biggest thing I'd want for men to hear is it is vulnerability as a consequence versus vulnerability as a decision are very different experiences.
Yeah.
And you will experience vulnerability.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it is learned, intentionally learned versus thrusted on you. It's a very different thing. And it's that moment you talked about, where there's going to be a moment in your life where things are going to blow up.
It's just going to stop working.
Right? Where you're going, this is now open. We're here. Whatever that, call it whatever it is. It could be personal, it could be circumstantial, whatever it is. And there's going to be an apparent need, and you're either going to have them there or you're not. But I think that vulnerability as a choice versus a consequence. I just keep coming back to that in my mind.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
Because if you're looking for a practical place to start, that's how I think you get to it. It's like, man, you don't want to have to wait till the moment happens that then forces this conversation, which then hopefully what you do is somebody gets thrusted into your story versus invited in. And you have to then wade through that, what that experience is going to be, good or bad. And a lot of times it doesn't go great or whatever, but I'm going to invite somebody into my story because that's the practical place to start, where everybody can start with it. Proximity, time, all those things you can get to, you have to fight for them. The biggest hurdle is not the decision of margin, even though with growing families, all those kinds of things, that can feel like the biggest margin.
Yeah.
The biggest margin is that 30 seconds of courage you need just to say, I'm going to invite somebody into my story.
I'm not okay. And I don't even know why I'm not okay.
Or what are you afraid of?
Tell me if you've, and I feel like you probably have, pastorally, when interacting with a guy, that vulnerability is now a part of their ecosystem, not by choice, not proactively, but because it all fell apart. And how many men I have walked with, pastored, cared for in that season who feel a relief.
Oh man.
An unburdening of their heart, a freedom. And what's hard is they're walking in a sense of like, whether they just got exposed or they just, you know, the marriage crumbled or whatever it might be.
Got fired, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's a release to that. But because it wasn't proactive or on their terms, there's now all kinds of collateral.
No question.
Yeah. That those in their orbit, the wounds are deeper, the pain that you'll have to walk. It's like, you don't get to avoid the pain.
Yep.
And so I just find that interesting, where guys may be forced into vulnerable moments and they wouldn't go there by choice, but they're there by circumstance. Yeah. There's a freedom then that they experience, but because they were forced into it or circumstances brought it on them, it creates a collateral for those around them, where it's like, you aren't being honest. You hid this from me, you know, all those kinds of things. And so it's like the stakes are so high. Any thoughts on that? You see that?
Yeah. And I think because the most men aren't deeply aware of their need for connection. You know, that idea of lonely, most men, you can help them understand, they'll get there really quickly. Like, oh, loneliness is what I feel, but that's not their daily experience. Mm-hmm. Am I lonely?
No, we're busy.
Yeah. And so I think that maybe comes to that when I keep going back to the consequence versus invitation, you see it over and over again, men especially, that are experiencing the freedom because, I'm not carrying this burden anymore. I'm not, all the work it takes to hold my story on my own.
Yeah.
All the effort that it takes to hold my story on my own. and all the freedom I have when other people can be forced to hold your story because now it's all been out, or they can be invited to hold your story.
Yeah.
And those are different things. And they're both risky and they both have challenges, but one is beautiful and one's tragic.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to talk a little bit about, you know, we keep talking about our story, and I just want to make sure, like, people who are guys who are listening to this in particular kind of get a sense of what we're talking about. So I'll use my own. I grew up in an environment that it could be explosive, it could be cold, it could be, and I learned really young, probably 9 or 10, I can control my environment. Mm-hmm. I can control it with my sense of humor. I can control it by getting things done. And what I didn't see and didn't know until I was in my 30s, until, like I said earlier, it just stopped working, was that under all of my achievement, under all of my success, was this lie that I'm useful, but not necessarily lovable. I'm useful, but not necessarily lovable. And that drove me through my 20s. Yeah. I mean, I was grind. I mean, I was just sick services, yes to everything. And especially if something was broken and needed to be fixed, that's what I wanted to do. In fact, when I started doing my own story, I was shocked to learn I literally never took a job in ministry that wasn't something in decline or almost dead, mm-hmm. but I needed to be the hero, because that's what I do. I'm useful. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not useful, then I don't matter. And I had no idea all that was under the surface. I knew I could get angry easy. I knew there were times I felt real numb when I shouldn't feel numb. And there was a loneliness there, even though I was surrounded by people, mm-hmm. and surrounded by good, godly men. And I'd have a Bible verse for anything you brought up to me. But I had no idea all of that was under the surface. And so in my middle-ish late 30s, I had my first, it just stopped working. And so I've used a lot of language over the years to talk about what that felt like. I've used the idea of felt thin. But the best way I know to talk about it is it just like everything stopped working at the same time. And so I felt numb and dull and, I didn't feel empty. I just felt like numb.
Yep.
And it wasn't tied to sex, and it wasn't tied to money, and it wasn't tied to how many people we were running at the church or what new initiatives we were doing. If anything, give me those initiatives, because I need to be useful.
Yeah.
And that's when I finally went and got help for the first time, and started for the first time having to write out like my story, like where I come from and what I've been through and I was shocked to come to the conclusion, my energy is not flowing from, I'm a beloved son of God, that I'm delighted in, that I'm enough, that it's my whole life's being driven by, if I'm not useful, I don't matter.
Yeah.
And then when that lid came off, one, it was the most, I've always used the word discombobulating year of my life. Because I was like, sheesh, who's driving me right now? What's driving me right now? Is it Hero Matt trying to be useful? Or can I rest in the fact that God loves me and I'm beloved? And so when we're talking about stories, that's kind of what we're talking about. Like, I know how Trevor was raised. I know specific stories of heartbreak. I know where certain lies that he's prone to believe came from. I know the same about Josh. I know the same about Mason. I know the same about Nick, that we've had these moments that marked us, where there was either a wound or there was a lie that was introduced. And I love this. I've used this illustration a bunch. There's this actual disease in trees called heart rot.
Yeah.
And what happens is when the tree is a sapling or something, it will get nicked by, it could be nicked by almost anything, another branch falling off a tree, a deer coming by, and then it grows to be big and strong. But that wound has led to it rotting out from the inside, and then eventually it just collapses on itself. And I think that's a lot of men. Yep. You see them and they look so strong, and it just looks like the whole world's in their hands, and then all of a sudden it just collapses on itself. And so when Trevor and Josh and me were talking about story, that's what we're talking about. And so I think if you're thinking about how do you get started here, I think deeper questions around the fire, as you're practicing proximity and as you're like creating a space where deeper storytelling can take place. But somebody there has got to be the one that goes, hey, that's not funny, because most of us as men, we've told these stories that are really awful.
Exactly. Yeah.
As kind of little funny stories about growing up that really are. Like, I remember the first time it happened to me where I was just telling a story I've told 1,000 times and everybody dies laughing at it. And a guy just went, hey, that's awful.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh my God. Oh yeah. Yeah. I never even thought about it like that. That is awful. Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking about story, that's kind of what we're talking about. That level of conversation of getting to know how Trevor, how Josh, how Mason, how Nick, how these guys have experienced life, not just family of origin stuff, because it can happen anywhere, and where those pain points are. And then now I understand Trevor a lot more and a lot more deeply. I understand Josh a lot more deeply, a lot more than maybe I would if we were just talking about the Cowboys or the sermon from last weekend or something like that.
Yeah, because when you know my story, you know how to step it. You know how to enter in and out of it.
Yeah.
You know what questions to ask in a deeper way. So I was thinking the same thing happened. I told my story of a moment in high school, and I've told this story so many times, and I remember sharing it, and I was sharing it as a pretty strong turning point in my life, but did not understand how shaping that my response to that moment was, and how much I had built my life out of that, and that actually has formed me in a way that is not true to who God created me to be, and that's a big thing to unpack. But the same thing, I told a story tons of times. And what I took from that story was actually, in the way I would explain it, tell it, was formed and shaped to protect the shame that I experienced in that story.
Yeah.
And when you just stop and go, hey, and you just ask the question, was that, or even just the response going, man, that must have been really, really hard. Like, what are you talking about? Is that hard? I've already done whatever I need to do in my mind, that really tough thing to avoid whatever that pain is, you know, but that's the invitation. It's, man, I'm going to invite people into my story, which means they're going to see things that I have intentionally chosen not to see,
but
they can help. That's where you're contributing and stepping into my story can bring Absolutely. Freedom,
What do you think kept you from intentionally seeing those things?
Shame. Yeah. No, because when I go back to that moment, when I experienced that moment, it was shame.
Totally.
And so what men do when they experience shame is the first question they ask in their mind is, how do I never feel that again?
Totally.
Well, how do I avoid whatever that feeling I'm feeling right now in that moment? How do I ever feel that again? And in that moment for me, it was the resolution in my mind. I am the only one looking out for me.
Yeah.
So I'm all there is. Okay. So then you begin to build a profile in your life around that.
Yeah, persona, protective narrative.
Yes, that have behaviors and actions and beliefs and values and artifacts, all that's associated with it. And then you do that at 17, and then I'm at 35 having the conversation. That's a long time.
That is.
That you've built in those things, which is most men.
Yeah.
Let me just say, not most men, it is every man.
Yeah.
And most of the time, if you spend a lot of time with people that are first responders, they like accidents or things like that, they have, in order to cope with tragedy that they're around all the time, learned to kind of joke about things that are really hard. Where you and I, if we were to see it, you go, man, that's really, really gnarly for us to look at. And we'd have a different response than they would, but that's how they've learned to cope and almost just kind of self-protect.
Yeah.
And we do the same things with our stories.
I think if you're a man and you're listening to this and you've got something behind you where you said to yourself, that's never going to happen to me again.
Yeah.
That's a place that you want to dig into.
Yeah. You're in like vow language.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, one, cause you can't control that. Mm. And so already you're carrying more weight than you're meant to carry.
Yeah.
Because if you're never going to be betrayed by that again, or you're never going to get hurt like that again, or you're never going to trust like that again, or you're never going to, one, you just shrank your world to such a tiny thing. No wonder you feel constrained, lonely, and numb. And so those are the kind of vows, as Josh said, that if you're hearing us talk about, that's where you want to start digging with this group that you're trying to build vulnerability as you're doing the proximity. And if you sprinkle in that unplanned interactions in it, it just makes everything deeper.
Well, because when you invite into story, the unplanned interactions just give more opportunity.
Yeah.
Because that proximity, that overlap, that time, that space, that interaction gives opportunity for a view in. So I'm able to ask a question, because when I see you do that, when I see you talk to your wife that way or say that, when somebody says something to you, I see the look on your face. I know layers deeper to be able to at least ask the question.
Yeah.
Hey, what were you thinking here? Or were you thinking that here? Or, you know, and then you're building towards it something completely different, you know?
One of the things I appreciate, like my language for like what happens to me if I'm not in a good spot, I'm not being me, I will power up. Yeah. And you heard Trevor say it even before I get it out of my mouth. I mean, that's what I'll do if I feel threatened or I'm not in a good place. My response is to power up because I can't be wrong, or I can't be dumb, or I need to be useful, or I need to matter in this space, or I need to. And if that feels threatened, even now, as a 50-year-old man, I'll power up. And so it's funny to be in so many meetings with you and you guys will see it. Uh-huh. And by the grace of God, it's happening less and less and less, but you just catch me on the wrong day. It'll be there.
Yeah.
But it feels safe to me, that, and you've already spoken to this quite a bit, Josh, you'll see that. And it's not a big deal because we have language for it. And you were with me as I was trying to go, oh my gosh, this is what I do. Mm-hmm. I tend to elevate. I tend to puff up. I tend to get bigger than human, not smaller. I'm not the turtle. I'm the porcupine.
Yeah.
And, other guys are the porcupine or the turtle, and they'll shrink way back. I'm more power up.
Yeah.
But there were seasons when you did shrink back.
Yeah.
If I think about certain seasons where, because of shame.
Yeah.
Where you pulled back from your true leadership, offering that fully. And again, these things happen. It's not like once you have these vulnerable fire nights or whatever we're going to do, and then all of a sudden it's like, we just walk in our true selves. It's a fight every day. There were seasons. I think your natural tendency is to power up.
Yeah.
And if we know that about one another, it's easier to do a little bit of judo to go, that's not true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something behind that.
Yep.
And be able to interact with that. Mm-hmm. There were seasons when you pulled back.
Yeah.
When you didn't bring.
Yeah. That's 15 to 19. I think I had 4 or 5 years.
I don't want to say the years, but those were the years. Yeah. Where we weren't getting.
All of you. Yeah.
Even when you were in proximity, and it was due to her, so we just think about the gift of the language and the awareness and is that we're able, as you're moving through this dynamic, fluid reality of relationships in life, is you're ebbing and flowing and inviting into and calling out what's true. And I do want to say this because both of you mentioned it. So when you came back from that intensive work, when you said, hey, it just stopped working, and because you're a good friend to me, you came back and we were sitting, it's like you had just gotten back, we're sitting on my back porch, Lauren's there, Natalie's there, we're having this conversation, and you said, hey, this was life-changing.
Yeah.
And you said, I've realized how I've basically over-functioned and compromised. I've had... because of the hurt that's in me, I've had to accommodate in certain ways. Yeah. And you were saying, I don't want to do that anymore. And then you said to me, I know your story. And because I know your story, I know there are ways you're likely doing it too. And you invited me into something deeper. I didn't have the language. I didn't have the muscle memory. I knew I had a friend who was willing to go with me and a genuine invitation of like, if he's in, I'm in. Yeah. You know, it's like what you said. Somebody's got to take the first step.
Yeah.
You in this case, took the first step
yeah.
and invited me into what was truly like a life-changing yeah. journey for me. And if there's all kinds of beauty in story work, there is the claiming of purpose. Like God has put something unique in me and owning that, then, and really being championed by brothers and sisters who know and love me in that. And so I got purpose
yeah.
and processing pain. So if you go back to the story, I know the interaction you're referring to,
yeah.
and I know how easy it is to tell that story in a funny, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
screw that dude,
yep.
you know, way. And we look bold and we look tough. We look, we don't give a crap.
I tell the story in such a way that I'll never feel that again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But what was under that story and what was under, am I just being used or am I actually yeah. loved and for mine as well, is deep pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that pain that goes unprocessed is that the pain that we don't process, it's in that cup that spills
yeah.
over
yeah.
that you mentioned earlier. So there's both in story work. Story work isn't like this slog fest that just simply sucks.
Yeah.
It is so life-giving as you see what God has put uniquely into your heart,
yes.
into your heart, what he has gifted you with and your talents, and there is purpose in it and there's pain in it,
yeah.
you know, and coming face to face with unprocessed pain. I think that was the biggest surprising thing for me. I came to faith at 19 and my story, my conversion was one of those stories that was like a real clear conversion, just a real crappy life before that. Well, the church, like the church in general, really liked that story.
Yeah.
And so that story was platformed. I would be invited into a small group. It's like, share your testimony. And I'd be invited over here. And so here I am sharing this story where I haven't processed the pain of that story.
Yeah, yeah.
I talked about how remarkable it was to go from death to life. And it has been. And it was. And it continues to be. But there's so much loss associated with that. So what's it like to grow up as a 9-year-old? For the next 9 years, wondering deep in the recesses of my heart,
yeah.
am I actually loved yeah. or am I just being used here? You know, just the
yeah.
the deep, like haunting questions that they're loud until you stuff them down and then you don't hear them anymore.
Yeah.
And then now you're in that place of isolation. Well, when you start doing story work, you take the lid off.
That's right.
And you've got to process that pain. And if we want to talk about men being courageous, that's courageous space.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And a man who has processed his pain and moved towards his purpose is a powerful man.
Yeah, yeah.
Is a powerful man. And the church and the world and families and communities need more men
yeah, yeah.
like that. And the fruit of that is relationship.
Yeah.
The fruit of that is connection.
Yeah.
And it's not just man to man, brother to brother. But it's a man who can connect with his wife in a deeper way,
yeah.
a man who can connect with his children in deeper ways. And I don't know anybody who doesn't want that.
Well, and the interesting thing about that, it is true for all of us. And I have never known anybody one of the most crucial ingredients to being able to experience that was others going into it with you.
Yeah.
You can't, for sure. You cannot do that alone.
For sure.
That's impossible, you yeah. know? And the other tragedy to it is most men, those moments, whatever that wall that we build around our story that we don't invite people into, the sad thing is we build that wall to keep the hurt out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the problem is we also trap our true self in.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the most surprising thing to me. Because I think a lot of, especially men, you know, I was sat with a man a couple months ago and we were about to do some of this story work. And his big question was, why in the world would I go back? I mean, he was sitting down willing to do it, but I'm just asking, yeah. How are you coming into this today? We're starting this conversation, starting this journey. And he said, why? I just don't see any profit to talking yeah. about pain in the past, you know? And the reason we're unlocking this is because we're talking about this is the, I mean, just such a key to men forming deep relationships with one another is this. This is both the key to doing it and the reason to it. But he said, why would I go back into my story? Like, that's just a bunch of pain. I can't see a lot of purpose in that. And the primary answer to that, and this is what I found out in my own life, because, you know, when I would tell that story and y'all reflected it back to me going, hey, that's a, I know you say that this way, but I think the language y'all said is, hey, I think there's more there, you know, to that. There would be for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know that I outright rejected it, but I was like, okay, sure. I just had no frame of reference for that being, because in my mind, I built the wall around it, you know, so I built the wall around it so that I can't ever experience that again. But what I learned when I went in there and opened that up was there was aspects of who I was that I left inside that wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that 17-year-old me, there were aspects about me that when I built the wall up, got trapped in, you know, and just stayed there.
And you're not going back. I had this conversation with a 23-year-old at lunch last weekend where I'm like, hey, we're not, like, we don't look back to like bag on our dad or something. That's not what this is. This is about me here to understand myself rightly and to see how the enemy has used things to contort and disrupt God's goodness that he put in me from the beginning.
Yeah.
So like right now, there's a man, probably some ladies, they're on the treadmill, they're in their car, maybe they're in their office watching, and they've heard us have this conversation. If you've got, you know, a takeaway for them, based on all that we've just shared, what would it be, Josh?
I would say take a deep breath.
Yeah.
And then take a step.
Yeah.
Take a step towards this. We didn't sketch out like, and Josh, make sure you have your takeaway. So here's what I would say. I was thinking about Way Forward. Way Forward is an organization that takes groups out backpacking. You guys know this because we've done several trips together. And one of the things, like the heartbeat of that trip, is you're sitting around the fire at night and somebody shares their story. There's a simplicity to it. So on these trips, it's, hey, just 20 minutes, just share your story 20 minutes. And then the next 20 minutes, the group can ask you whatever they want. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how
simple.
It's just simple. I'm going to share, and then whoever's listening is going to just ask me questions.
Yeah.
And it can go wherever it goes. To me, just being around so many of those Way Forward trip environments, you don't have to be like deeply equipped to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have some kind of degree or experience. It's just, I'm going to share and invite people in to ask me some questions. That's what I would encourage some folks to do.
Yeah.
Just like take a step like that, an intentional step, and make space for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. Trev?
Yeah. I think specifically because we're talking to men, I think men crave adventure. And I think and adventure doesn't have to look like we're going skydiving. Adventure for most, I mean, there are plenty of times a fire at 9 o'clock at night is adventure. You know, there's adventure is outside of the norm, doing something that's going to break me out of my roles and responsibilities, right? Adventure is where you're going to experience some sense of freedom from the day to day. And that's why I don't want to create, it's just, man, I've got to, it may be I can create room and do a backpacking trip. It may be I'm going to do a fire night. Maybe we're going to go shooting, whatever it is. I think men crave adventure, but I think it's intentionally creating those spaces, a different space, you know, that you can step into. And there is, back to what we talked about at the very beginning, it is just true. Stepping into this kind of space with other men is a different experience. It's just, I mean, you know, by virtue of being married, my wife is an owner of my story. She knows my story. All these things she talked about, I mean, there's things she had been pressing. And I think it's a really important distinction because she's an unbelievable woman and is so gifted in these spaces and pressed me for years in ways that that I didn't hear until you guys did.
Yeah.
And I have an amazing marriage, you know.
Yeah.
And she, you know, I remember coming home to her and telling her about, the guys, they were pressing me on this about my story, and I really realized this. And she goes, yes, I've been telling you that.
I've been saying this for, yes,
you felt orphaned. Yeah. Trevor, do you remember when I introduced that word to you? I was like, okay. And, you know, that's not tragic. That's my design. There's a way that I can hear it, you know, when I'm in a space with other men.
Yeah.
And I think there's just really, and I think especially in our day, when there's never been a time in our culture where to be a man hasn't been more suspect,
yeah.
you know, to be free to do it, be a man
yeah.
and to do masculine things. And so I would just encourage men, step, because so much of our worlds are trying to pull us away from those kinds of experiences, away from those kinds of rhythms, activities, experiences, adventures. And I think fighting for that, because in those spaces, you can really unlock some other things. So it's in those kinds of spaces where I think this, and then just, man, starting with the, I think the two easy things to start with is the, who do you think you are? You know, that's always a question of who do you think you are? And just starting. I think those, you can just, that's like steps. You can just go in. And then the one we've been talking about a lot that we've been using a lot is, what are you afraid of?
Yeah.
You know, those are big ones. I think those are vulnerability type questions
yeah.
that maybe your first couple of times wading out to them aren't going to get you into deep waters, but eventually, you know, breakthrough can happen, you know? Yeah.
Here's what I would, if you're listening to this or watching this, my guess is that you do have some guys around you. Maybe they're in your home group or Sunday school class at church. Maybe they're in your men's Bible study that you go to, but you've got some guys. If you don't have those guys, then I would go to those places to find some guys. Mm-hmm. And then what I would do is get a couple of them. As you're kind of working proximity, as you're getting to know, invite a couple of them into this with you so that even this journey becomes a group of men on a journey and not just you trying to figure it out or you trying to even lead out in this. So maybe an idea would be just share this podcast with a couple of guys and just go, I'm down if you guys are, and then figure out a rhythm, what works for you in the season of life you're in and in the, you know, with all the details of your lives, how do we move towards this together? Because that has been the thing that's marked us. It's, we have been on this together for a long time. And I might've been the one to break the seal, if you will, but I very much put all of this in a, we have been on this journey and it has bore the fruit that it's bore, which really I would just go, I think longevity in ministry, longevity in marriage, healthy yeah. lives all the way around, whether that's physical, emotional, spiritual, all of that, the Lord's used this little King's table to bring in my own life and the testimony of this group's been in our lives. We've repeatedly said, this is the good life.
Amen.
And so that would be my encouragement. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Overcomers. Pray it blessed you. Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in to The Overcomers. I just pray your heart is always encouraged in the Lord. Really, the ministry I feel God's called me to in this season is to be one that's encouraging you, telling you the Lord sees you, reminding you of the opportunities that we have as the people of God in this day. And so the Overcomers podcast is one of the ways I do that. Another way is that I'm sending out a monthly newsletter. And in that, I've got a little audio link for kind of things I'm thinking about and wrestling through that I'm not necessarily preaching on. And so in the show notes is a link where you can go and sign up for that monthly email. And so, man, if The Overcomers is encouraging you, I would encourage you then to click on that link, sign up for the newsletter. And it's a way for me to further encourage you as you seek to live as overcomers in this current moment.